The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Thank you very, very much indeed. Now, we have been joined in studio by Captain Evan Cullen, who is President of the Pilots Association. And on the line, we've Chris Bellamy, Defence and Security Expert at the University of Greenwich. Now, Chris, you've a special interest in the region of Russia and Ukraine as a former journalist, defence correspondent of the London Independent newspaper. And you cover the Gulf War, 1991, Bosnia, Chechnya, da-di-da. And won awards indeed for all of those. So, first of all, how do you articulate an update on what happened in Donetsk that we know of?
Well, very soon after the plane disappeared off the radar, it was reported that it had been shot down by a Buk missile. That's an SA-11 or SA-17. The former has a maximum altitude it can strike at about 33,000 feet, 10,000 meters. The later versions can go up to 72,000 feet and hit a spy plane. That seems to have been correct. It may be that American satellites, which will no doubt be keeping an eye on the area a few weeks ago, you may remember they actually tracked three tanks coming across from Russia into eastern Ukraine. It may well be that they actually saw it from a satellite. So I don't think there's much doubt that that's what happened. There reports were intercepted that indicating that the local so-called pro-Russian Ukrainian separatists thought they had hit a Ukrainian military plane, and one had been shot down there shortly before. A few days before, and then suddenly all the tweets were deleted when they realized that they'd hit a civilian airliner traveling Great Circle from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur.
Let's go through again who the pro-Russian rebels are. Is it just, are they Russian? Are they Ukrainian? Is it language?
They use the Russian language. They are, I suppose, ethnically Russian, but following the various manipulations of borders throughout the 20th century, they find themselves now in Ukraine. When the Ukraine was a Soviet Socialist Republic from within the Soviet Union, it didn't matter. But when a pro-Western government took power in Kiev, then this large Russian ethnic, Russian-speaking population in eastern Ukraine started to get unhappy. So that's the origin of the current dispute, which is in fact a minor civil war. It's ironic that the number of people killed in this plane incident is actually as many as have died in the rest of the conflict so far put together. So a tragic, absolutely tragic, catastrophic mistake by these pro-Russian rebels. And of course, the Russians don't necessarily agree with that. The Russians may be very embarrassed by this, I think. So they were supplied with a sophisticated missile, but my understanding is that they weren't supplied with the associated radars, which would have enabled them to determine the nature of the plane. And also, of course, they don't have the intelligence which they would have in Kiev and they would have in Moscow on international flights transiting that area. So lack of intelligence, catastrophic mistake, 300 people dead.
Let me come to you, Evan. I presume that this is well, clearly, well, it's the passenger's nightmare, but it's the pilot's nightmare too. What kind of info do, or instructions even, do pilots get about this? Because I remember when the Balkans War was going on, I don't remember where I was going, but I remember flying over and thinking, God, there's misery down under here. But it didn't cross my mind that you would be unsafe in an aeroplane way up in the sky.
war zones or areas of conflict, Marion, we receive information through a system called NOTAMS, it's Notices to Airmen. And what we're normally told is areas which are prohibited and areas which are strongly recommended that you shouldn't go into, which are normally giving a safe corridor. And there was a corridor designed to be safe through Ukrainian airspace. That if you could picture an elongated rectangular box, and the lowest part of that box at the time was 32,000 feet. Now, I know there's a lot of criticism of Malaysian Airlines for using the corridor, but a UK-registered aircraft used the corridor just before it happened. A UAE-registered aircraft also used the corridor. Some other airlines stayed well clear of all Ukrainian airspace. They just took that decision. But it was well within the legal gift of the government of Ukraine to prohibit the Malaysian Airlines entering the airspace, and also within the gift of the Malaysian government, who hold the operator certificate on Malaysian Airways. They could have said, you're not to go into Ukraine airspace.
Yeah, I understand that the Italians and the...
Yeah, the two governments. You see, it all comes under the Chicago Convention on how aviation law works in this regard. And most countries of the world, I think well over something like 99% of the countries of the have signed up to the Chicago Convention to certain degrees. And that just says all airspace is sovereign. If you, whatever airspace is above you or your territory is sovereign. But, and then people need permission to transit that airspace. But when you give the permission, you're also saying that it's safe to do so. And when you take away the permission, you're saying, well, one of the reasons is we can't guarantee your safety.
Right.
So I would be reluctant to say that Malaysian Airlines are wrong, because there was a well-known branded UK-registered airline transited the airspace, and also a very well-known UAE airline transited the airspace. So airlines of very high regard were using this safe corridor. The game changer in all of this, Marion, was for the first time that I can remember, a terrorist group has had access to a very sophisticated missile system, like a system that can hit anything at 33,000 feet that's moving. Like, they would have been doing about 80% the speed of sound. So it's a difficult, it takes a lot of technology to hit an aircraft at 33,000 feet doing 80% the speed of sound. And even part of this missile system, I know the later generation of it, can take out aircraft at up to 80,000 feet. Like, the operating altitude of Concorde was about 60, 65,000 feet. So there's an awful lot of sophistication was handed over to these people who did this. Because the other previous big tragedies in this area was the South Korean jumbo. And that was actually shot down by a Russian MiG with permission from the Russian government. And the other big loss was an Iranian Airbus, which was shot down by a U.S. warship in the Gulf. You know, so this is the first time we've seen a terrorist group gain access to such a sophisticated system that they can do this.
Well, would that track straight back then to Putin, Chris?
It looks as if it does. I mean, I agree absolutely with everything that Evan said. And as I say, you give somebody a really, really sophisticated weapon system, but if they don't have the training and the supporting network of intelligence, then things can go horribly wrong, which I think is what happened here. Those missiles can... I think they can only have come from Russia, although the Ukrainians have them as well. But if some Ukrainian missiles had been stolen by the rebels, I think we'd know about it.
Why would we?
Well, I think for a start, the Ukrainian government would make sure we did.
Well, yeah, except you never know how governments work when they're trying to cover their own backs and cover things up. I mean,
it's one of the fascinating things I found about this was within hours of this incident, the Americans were able to say it was hit by a missile.
Yeah.
And yet, the other Malaysian aircraft... Nobody seems to be able to know what went on. And it just seems remarkable that when the intelligence is needed for the political game, it's there, and it's not so available when it's not needed.
Yeah, yeah. And you wonder, do they know where that other Malaysian plane is? And did they not want to reveal the fact that they probably know where everything is, including my mobile phone? Like,
you know? Intelligence on the aircraft, there is actually an app you can get for your iPhone. And if you point it at the sky and if you point it at any particular aircraft, it'll tell you what the aircraft is and where it's going. And I don't have one, but they do exist, these apps. And it seems extraordinary that if you're going to shoot at airplanes, you might want to have such an app, you know.
It would seem to me that the whichever group of so-called pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine it was, and of course there are several groups, there isn't one single command in that whole area, they probably didn't have the app, because I don't think it would have been in anybody's interest to bring down a completely innocent civilian airliner which was not involved in the conflict.
I just wonder if this will change some things in aviation, because as Evan says, this is the first time that a non-state actor has done something like this. And throughout the past 13 or 14 years, when there's been war in Afghanistan, aircraft have flown, commercial aircraft have flown over Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And that's been a very troublesome spot. And if you can think of all the other troublesome places in the world, the question now is, will insurers or will the aviation industry start to question the current practices? And could that make a big difference? Because one of the reasons, of course, that airlines choose particular routes is cost. And they choose the most cost-effective one that they can get.
Yeah.
And so this could have further knock-on effects.
But is it not extraordinary? Just on the most basic question, if they were aware that this military hardware was in the vicinity, if during the previous week two aircraft had been shot down, presumably flying at a similar height, why would there have been a territory, an unrestricted territory at 32,000, would it stop at 32,000 feet?
Just my understanding is that the two military aircraft were not shot down at that region. Like military aircraft go from 100 feet up to 100,000 feet, whereas the civilian aircraft, we normally cruise between 30 and 41, maybe 42.
So the simple answer is they didn't realise that they had weaponry of this sophistication on the ground?
I can only presume when they Ukrainian government and lots of other governments were willing to tolerate this so-called safe corridor and put a hard deck on it at 32,000 feet, nobody knew that this missile system had been handed over to these people.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the things you were saying during the break there, Ciarán, is that, again, looking at Europe, you say it's 25 years since the wall came down in Berlin, and that we just regarded ourselves as victors. I say we in the broad sense, as victors, and not like, say, what happened after the Second World War and the Marshall Plan.
Yes, it was. So this is the 25-year anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And our reaction, I suppose, to the fall of the Berlin Wall was very, very, very different to how we reacted after this end of the Second World War, when the victors realised that for world peace and indeed prosperity, we had to look after the vanquished, and therefore the Marshall Aid Plan was put into place, and you know, Europe and Germany included was allowed to develop. However, 25 years ago, when the Berlin Wall fell and we were told it was the end of the Cold War, and indeed capitalism had triumphed over communism, it wasn't as benevolent, I suppose, a response. The response was more, well, here you go, guys, we have won. And, oh, by the way, look, you know, we'll show you how to implement capitalism. But it wasn't in a kind of in a benign way or in a partnership way. It was more our corporations or Western corporations went and looked for investment opportunities in Russia. And as well, very tellingly, there was an implicit promise made then and again at the time of the reunification of Germany that NATO would not press up onto the border of Russia. And here we have an almost provocative situation whereby NATO were pushing quite strongly, you know, to get Ukraine into the alliance, and the European Union were offering Ukraine all these, rather than, say...
On the
very border, breaking the promise made at the time of reunification.
I think there was actually rather a lot of resistance within NATO to the notion of Ukraine joining. But I think also we shouldn't get too sentimental about Vladimir Putin, who has been behaving like a bully, not just in Ukraine, but throughout the neighbourhood. And he's somebody whose particular form of authoritarian political culture and nationalism is something that is a menace to his neighbours. And so I think it's quite proper, while we certainly should seek to de-escalate and should operate through diplomatic means, it's quite proper to be tough with somebody like Putin.
Evan, when they go through whatever they will go through in terms of, we all know about the black box, which I understand is orange, but anyway, never mind that. Will it be, I gather that if this is what happened, it'll be pretty evident pretty quickly.
Just talking to accident investigators, even without the data recorders, it will be very evident from the wreckage if, first of all, an explosion took place, and whether that explosion was delivered by a missile or from within the aircraft. Not only that, but on the forensics, they'll be able to trace back the explosives that were used in the weapon. Right. So even
we will find out.
Yeah, no, there's no question that they will eventually find out. One of the things I do know about the data recorders is, although they're designed to be crash proof, they're certainly not tamper proof. Right? You know, like if any kind of an aviation technician gets his hands on them for the purposes of doing them damage or disrupt, it's quite easy to do so if you know what you're doing. So that would be the concern, because they are saying that they can't find them or they're not there or whatever. So, and it's self-evident that they are at the crash site, because they are located in the bottom of the fin on the aircraft, and the fin was clearly visible in some of the news.
Some of the shots,
So they are there, or they should be there, and certainly they are. They're not built to be tamper-proof. They're built to be crash-proof.
Right, and I gather that it's nearly like a tourist zone out there at the moment, with people trying to go over the place. Before I let you go, Chris, what do you think the political impact from this will be?
I think the political impact will be very profound. The Russians will say that they don't have much influence over these so-called pro-Russian separatists. I think it's much more complex than that. I think President Putin will be under huge pressure, is under huge pressure, to use his influence to ensure that the international investigators are allowed to conduct their examination quickly, and the sooner a firm international presence is established, then the sooner we can get on with the investigation and finding out or confirming what caused this horrendous tragedy.
Right. OK. Listen, Chris Bellamy, thank you very, very much indeed for that, and we'll take a break.